Welcome to the Barefoot Bushcraft Radio Show. Today is Saturday, June 8th, 2013, and we are broadcasting live on the Foodomizer Radio Network. In this episode, we'll discuss the death of a mountain rescue climber, review the Coglins Magnesium Fire Starter, and speak to a very special guest, David Arama, a survival expert from the WSC Survival School. This is your host, A.D. Venture. And as always, I'm joined by...
You're joined by the Wolfman. Welcome, everyone. Oh, yeah.
Great stuff. All right, we're really excited about today's show. We got a lot of great stories to talk about and a really special guest. So let's get right on into it, then.
In good news.
This week in our first story, what we're going to be discussing is essentially a program that Provincial Parks has set up here in Canada to promote going out and camping with new immigrants and new Canadians and so forth, and try to get them integrated into a really main staple of Canadiana. Why don't you let us know a little bit more about that story while I post that link in the chat for our listeners here, Wolf?
Sure. Absolutely. Now, the program is available to newcomers to Canada, and so it's people who have come from other countries that maybe camping is not a very common thing. Maybe perhaps places like India or other countries where basically being outdoors, spending the night outdoors is not something that's done. So what basically Parks Canada has put together is a program where, and I believe there's almost no charge for this program, and you show up and you'd go out with a qualified ranger. They take you out into the woods and they show you campcraft, bushcraft skills, how to pitch a tent, tent locations, all of the things that are rudimentary about camping. So you're coming to a country that is based on bushcraft. You know, North America in general was settled with bushcraft, right? There was a time, and I think we've discussed this earlier on the show, where if you didn't have an axe and a knife, you probably were going to have a very difficult time surviving. So it's such a huge part of our culture, right? We have something here in Canada called the May 2-4 weekend or Victoria Day weekend. Traditionally, that's when many Canadians go and they open up cottages and they go camping. Being in the outdoors is a deep-rooted part of Canadiana. And what this program does is takes people who may not otherwise have the opportunity or are maybe scared or they don't have any knowledge or maybe whatever challenges that they may face to keep them out of the woods, and it takes them out there. And I think this is just a fantastic program. I mean, what a great way to explore what Canada truly is than going out hiking. Now, this year's program, it was rained out, it says in the article, as you'll read. It poured rain, but they still had I'm sorry, I don't know the exact number, but they had a fantastic amount of people show up. It is written in the article, isn't there, AD Venture?
Absolutely, yep. They got, at least one particular party or a little family got rained out a bit, but it was something that they enjoyed, they said in the article, and that they felt that they learned a lot, and it was just something that was just very new and very Canadian to them, and again, they were very grateful to being able to experience that sort of thing.
For sure. And I mean, there's so many people that think that, oh, I have young children, I can't camp, or, you know, I talk to many people who say, well, you know, before the kids were born, I used to be like you. I used to be an adventurer like you. And it's like, you know, you don't have to stop because they can go out too. And I think we talked about this briefly at the Headwaters gathering, that there was a couple at Headwaters who had their baby on the Monday, the young lady, and on Thursday they were camping at Headwaters. That's fantastic. I mean, what an amazing way. Imagine if we all had that opportunity to grow up in the wilderness, the things you see. And I find working with young students, you know, I take them out into the wilderness, especially for things like geocaching or whatever, and they have a totally different perspective on nature and the world than we do. So I learn an awful lot from them, where it's like, you know, you take them to an area and, okay, the GPS says it's here, and I'm just looking around basically trying to get my bearings, and they're like, oh, here's the box. It's like, that would have taken me an hour to find. You know, and they have children have a really unique perspective. They have a lot more wonderment of the beauty of nature than a lot of us have as we grow older. Sadly, many of us lose that, and I think that's something that it can benefit you as the parent as well, right? If you have children and you manage to get out there and get camping, and especially if you you know, if you have children and you're new to the country, the last thing you want to do is accidentally endanger your family. So I think this program is fantastic. It's a really wonderful program, and I wish it was. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it is a great program, and it definitely encourages a lot of people that do come from other parts of the world into Canada. And Canada is a very giving country that does give a lot of opportunities to people throughout the world to leave the situations that they're in and to come to a place that they're truly free. And even though, you know, they do recognize this freedom, they are coming from a lot of places in other parts of the world where there's guerrilla warfare, where there's strife. And going out into the wilderness may not normally be something that they would do. So it's something that we do have to consider here in Canada, that the program is in place for a reason to encourage a lot of people that might not normally go out into the wilderness, again, because they would associate that with maybe guerrillas, with minefields, with a lot of danger. And again, the whole purpose of the program is not only to encourage the usage and the increased usage of the national park systems that exist, but also to try to integrate these new Canadians into the fabric of the society by letting them understand that going out into the forest is a really safe thing, and they can really enjoy themselves and really benefit from that sort of thing, unlike what they previously experienced in their birth countries.
Yeah, for sure. And it the dangers in forests are different in Canada than they are in other parts of the world. There's a very famous story from, you know, people of Asian descent go when they go into Canadian wilderness and like, oh, I recognize that mushroom, and they eat it and they get sick. Just because it looks this way in our country doesn't mean it looks the same in a totally different hemisphere. I once took out a group of young Australian girls on an adventure, and they said, well, geez, you know, we should keep away from that little that old mine shaft there, or a pit. It was like a filled up mine shaft, like an old open quarry. She said, we got to keep away from that quarry. I said, oh, how come? And they're like, well, there are crocodiles in there. You know, like, they're in real danger. And I said, no, we're very fortunate in Canada that, for the most part, there isn't a whole lot out there that's going to eat us. I don't know very many people that have, you know, just been wandering around and gotten dragged into the woods by something. It's a very, very rare case. So rare, in fact, that when it happens, it makes the news, because it's – and I think we talked a couple of weeks about a guy who a bear just appeared and, you know, charged his house and such, and he had to make some phone calls. And, yeah, so stuff like that is very rare in Canada. And, you know, it's all new. And it could also be the country that you're from, that going into the wilderness could present opportunity for running into, like, guerrilla warfare or any number of bad things.
Absolutely. So let's talk about another news story that we want to fit in here today. And I'm just going to put the link quite quickly here in the Freedomizer Radio chat program. And this story actually is about a climber, an actual rescuer. Let me just quickly pull up the article here. And essentially, let me read a few things about this article so that our audience can fully understand what went down. And I will be quoting a few lines from the article. So a recent review by the American National Park Service determined that a pervasive level of comfort working in dangerous conditions among climbing rangers on Mount Rainier was a factor in the death of Nick Hall. This is the individual that was a rescuer that died in June 21st, 2012. So it's over a year ago here. Now, the 33-year-old climbing ranger fell to his death while trying to rescue four climbers on the mountain. On the Mount Rainier National Park, he was actually working there for about 4 years. And the day that he died, he was one of the four rangers attempting to rescue the four climbers from Waco, Texas. He descended from about 14,411-foot summit, and two of the climbers fell into a crevice at about 13,800-foot level between Columbia Crest and Liberty Cap at the Emmons Glacier. Now, according to the Park Service report, Hall had used an ice tool to carve a platform in the ice and snow on which he was treating one climber. When the Army Reserve Chinook helicopter, now that's definitely a big helicopter, I'm sure, Wolf, you can attest to that, When that arrived to the litter, the litter essentially is a little pod to try to attempt to rescue. An unroped haul, this is the individual we're talking about now, walked across the glacier with the ice tool, but planted it into the ice at some point. Now, after that, unhooking the litter, he struggled as it was buffeted by the wind and the downdraft from the twin rotor helicopter Chinook. He spun around trying to control the litter, but lost his balance and fell backwards. Now, without the ice tool, he tried to stop down this slide, which was about 35 degrees. That's a very steep slope, with only the crampons on his feet. For our audience that isn't aware about mountaineering, crampons are essentially devices that you strap over your boot or your foot, and they've got usually pieces of metal that are sharp and that will stick into the ice and will give you a nice firm grasp. And
they're kind of like football cleats, but they're like 2-inch spikes, right?
Yeah, very,
like
very
really aggressive
for this sort of situation, exactly. And unfortunately, he's hit a sérac, which is a column of glacial ice. And unfortunately, this launched him about 30 to 40 feet into the air, according to the report. And his body came to a rest about 2,400 feet down the glacier. Now, according to this report here, it says that Nick Hall was on a steep, icy, exposed glacier, not attached to an anchor, and did not have an ice axe. He did not have what we call fall protection. The investigation team determined that because the park's mountaineering rangers were routinely performed had routinely performed high-risk search and rescues on glaciers on the mountain, they had inadvertently become desensitized to the hazards of their job. And I think that's probably the key point here of the article that we're trying to discuss.
For sure. Now, everybody is guilty of being desensitized. How many times have you heard of a guy who... you know, he's wasted, drunk, and he decides he's going to use his table saw, and he takes a finger off. Police officers, notoriously for underestimating a situation, going, oh, this is a routine traffic stop, and they get shot in the face, you know, or not necessarily death, but, you know, other issues happen. I think it's in everybody's interest, and I suppose I'm no different. You know, when I'm out with campers and stuff, you know, they – perceive something as dangerous, and we're like, ah, don't worry about it. It's all good. I think this happens to everybody at some point.
That's true. But this is actually a topic that's fairly close to my heart, something that I've been looking into for quite a long time. And it's something that I'm trying to understand a lot more, and I'm doing a lot of research into the topic. And this is really, you know, it can expand a lot further outwards, but bottom line is it's the extreme sports or the extreme experiences that current mankind or society, if we want to call it that, is pursuing or attempting to pursue. We see all these different activities from extreme downhill mountain bike racing to I mean, you can name all these different sorts of activities and find an extreme nature in one. I mean, extreme helicopter, parachute jumping, extreme helidiving, all these different activities that exist and that are continually being created. Like we're going to be looking at a lot of people skydiving from the stratosphere now that that's been introduced with the Red Bull competition. So, again, we're seeing a lot of increase in society attempting to, you could call it, get their fix in extreme adventure, but it's something that appears just like any other drug addict, where they just never get enough. And you become desensitized to these sorts of risks that you're putting yourselves into, and it generally ends in tragedy, unfortunately.
But I think a lot of that could easily stem from the fact that we have a relatively easy life in the respect that all for the most part, most of us who partake in these activities, our lives are easy. We don't have the challenges that early man would have had, right? So we have all this excitement that we want to put out. You know, we have all this, we're all hyped up and excited and have the tools to, like, it's time for me to be man and hunt. And we don't need that anymore. You know, a lot of us work in office jobs, which, as almost anybody who's worked in an office job can tell you, is one of the most, can be one of the most challenging things for somebody into, who's got a bit of adventure in them, because the office will kind of, I suppose, to quote the movie Office Space, it will suck the life out of you. And, you know, and I, as a former office employee, I have to admit that it wasn't a very pleasant experience for me working in an office. So then we go out and we start saying, okay, I'm going to go out and see the world. Now I've got the money. My home is taken care of. I don't have to hunt. You know, I'm not going to, you know, my phone's not being disconnected, so I don't have to worry about any of that. You still have all this energy, this like self-actualization, so to speak. And I think with that is where that sort of comes in, that it's like, now I'm going to try something really amazing because I've gotten to the highest point. So this is the next natural progression in that. I don't know how you feel about that, AD.
Well, again, we've had this sort of discussion off the air, you know, for hours on end, and this is more so just to try to acquaint our audience with an understanding of the different aspects of these extreme sports or extreme adventure experiences, and there are both pros and cons with extremes, and unfortunately, I personally feel that society has sort of lost focus on what's exactly important, and we look for something to fill a void, and rather than looking for something that's fulfilling, we look for something that's extreme, or we get confused in that manner, or at least a lot of society appears to be that way, mainstream that is, at least what we see in newspapers and so forth. And you've got these people that are putting themselves into precarious situations where they will risk their lives just to attain something that is only going to last an instant, and then they're going to be craving that additional high. And for example, I mean, it's great, you know, to be able to whitewater canoe down some rapids. You know, that's, you know, enjoyable. You're putting yourself, you know, through some risk. That's great. You know, you're also enjoying yourself. However, if you can get the same sort of enjoyment or more so from canoeing on a flat lake with, you know, with no waves, just enjoying the situation, is that not just as valuable? And therefore, if that's the case, why would you want to have an extreme situation, extreme point where you can enjoy something when you can have just the same enjoyment doing something that doesn't put yourself as much in as much risk? And therefore, I believe that society has to look to see what's in fact important and valuable to them to truly understand that extreme situations aren't necessarily the most fulfilling. Sometimes the most simplest ones are.
I have to agree. I mean, looking back at some of the choices that I've made in my life, you know, it's like, well, here's an example, why people join the military, right? The ones I'm about to discuss are by far not the only reasons, so I don't want to get a slew of callers about this, but one of the reasons is because they want the adventure, they want to go out, and I mean, when you sign up, you watch TV growing up, you know it's going to be awful. You're not going to get much sleep, you're going to be dirty a lot, it's going to be just basically crappy, right? But why do people still join up? You know, you see World War II movies and you hear about what happens to POWs, but we still sign up for lots of different reasons. But one of those many, many reasons is because we want that adventure. We want that danger. We want that, I have no idea how this is going to end up. And it stretches your mind a little bit, you know? And, you know, again, with the whitewater rafting, we know that it's dangerous. We know, we make that conscious decision to say, I'm going to do this because it's going to be awesome. You know, I made many choices when I was out. I'm sorry?
No, go ahead, Wolf.
And it is completely unrelated in every way to military service, but when I was out on the Bruce Trail, you know, I made many decisions of how I was going to conduct the trip, and it was like, it was hard, it was awful, sweaty, smelly, dangerous, all that rolled into one, but I wouldn't trade those experiences for anything. And I think it's, we have that innate desire for controlled hardship. And by controlled, I don't mean like, oh, I want to be homeless. I mean like, that would be an uncontrolled. But you want that. I want to push myself. I want to see how far I can go. And maybe this is the adventurer in me talking. And I want to try to do my best to bounce back from that. So we have that. But we also want the control as well, again, to know that, you know, yes, I'm hiking this trail and I'm way out in the wilderness. Anything can happen. However, push one button on the spot unit, help is on its way.
I do have to mention a couple of comments here. I wanted to mention that I've put myself into precarious and risky situations that at my age right now, I look back and I'm horrified at the risks that I put myself into when I was younger, thinking on how immune I was. And it's something that I guess does come with some sort of age and wisdom to be able to see, you know, what kind of risks are worthwhile and which ones are not. But I wanted to quickly make a point about military service, where, yes, the risks that are involved there are quite high. However, it is essentially understood that that's part of the duty, and essentially it's worth, you know, it's part of the risk. It's not the adventure risk that we're seeing a lot of people encounter and thusly, you know, become a tragic victim to, with people that are vacationing or are doing so as part of their daily job, as this recent situation of the search and rescue mountain climber. But with military service, I do believe it's a little bit different than that. There's definitely quite a lot that we could talk about in this situation. Don't you agree, Wolf?
Oh, absolutely. And that, like I say, it was just a brief comment on why some people choose to sign up, not designed for any other reason, just than that. And again, you know, the reasons are varied, but that's one reason that when I talk to guys, a lot of guys sign up because they say they want the adventure. So,
yeah. All right, let's quickly move into our next segment.
Tips and tricks.
All right. In this week's tips and tricks segment, we're going to be discussing the Coughlin's Magnesium Fire Starter.
Yeah, that is a great fire starter. We've made a video of it. The video is on barefootbushcraft.com under the video section.
I'll put up that link.
Excellent. And you can go on there and you can watch your co-host AD Venture go on there and try these out. These are one of those, the Deese tools, the magnesium things are, and we mentioned this in the video, it's very misunderstood. It's one of those things that many people are like, huh, I think I could like that. I think that might come in handy. You buy it because it's like under $10, you chuck it in a backpack and you never use it again. Or you have it and you say, you know what, I really should, I don't want to use it in case I'm ever in that situation that I need it. And nobody uses them. But we decided to put it through its paces. The Coughlin's brand is synonymous with outdoor stuff. The quality, of course, that's up for debate. It's your own personal feeling on that. But it's basically a chunk of magnesium on one side and a little tiny teeny ferrocium strip on the other side. And how you use them is you take the you flip it over, you take the magnesium side, you grind it off into little chunks. Strike it with the ferrocium rod on some natural tinder or a cotton ball or something, you're going to get a big, huge flame. Best part about magnesium is if your tinder is wet, magnesium burns brighter. Magnesium reacts with water when it's being lit on fire. It's fantastic. So I'll let AD Venture tell you a little bit more about the video, since I know you did the bulk of the demonstration.
Yeah, it was actually it was a really short take. We got everything in basically just two takes, you know. And it was just really easy to just get a little bit of those shavings off the magnesium block. We already had a pre-prepared tinder pile ready, and we had a couple of cotton balls as well. What we did is we just, you know, lit it up, and it started basically on the fourth strike. I just have to get the angle right. Again, that's something that everyone just has to practice on. You can't just buy one of these products and say, oh, it's just going to work for me. You have to actually purchase the product and try it out in a situation where you're not being stretched, where you're not being pushed to the limit, even perhaps in a survival situation. So you actually have to be comfortable with these sorts of products. And as I mentioned in the video, you have to take your time, you have to position yourself properly, and you just have to try. You can't get frustrated if you can't light it in the first go. There's techniques involved in these things, and the only way to understand how these techniques work is for you to try them yourselves, because it's the only way for you to understand how it works with your body, because, again, your hand is obviously different from mine, so it's going to handle the knife and the magnesium block much more differently. But either way, it's just a matter of practicing and going forth with trying these things before you get yourselves into a precarious situation.
Yes, actually, the facility that I work at is an outdoor education facility, and we're just doing our staff training. And I had the company buy a pile of these things, and I took all my staff out today as part of their safety training. And I was like, okay, now you know how to, you know, do the usual camp stuff, right? Using an axe, batoning wood. I said, now we're going to try to start fires, and we used those, and I made sure that all of my staff members were completely competent in using these, and everybody had the same attitude, like, oh, I've seen these before, I've used these, I've got one, okay, that's great, use it. And for a lot of them, although most of the guys had seen them or have possession of one, they have never used them before. And I think that's the difference between the armchair survivalist and the people like Edie Venture and myself who actually live the lifestyle, is you have to practice all the time. And it's not like, oh, I did that when I was 8 in Scouts. Well, how old are you now? I'm 38. It's been 30 years since you've actually practiced. It's like driving a car or bicycle or any of those things. You need to get out there and at least once every now and again do the thing, right? Take it out, get some tinder, put it all together, scrape some magnesium off that block. I had one gentleman who said, well, I don't really want to use it in case I need it in an emergency. And my response was like, how many shavings do you need? Like, if you just shave off a couple of, not even a millimeter of that, like you take a cotton ball and you scrape it, the cotton ball's going to get covered in those very quickly. Or natural tinder if you're using like cattail or anything, depending on where you live in the world. It's going to spark. And it's important to get out there, whether it be on a picnic table in your backyard or, you know, if there's a safe area in a city park that you can start. You're not starting a bonfire. You're starting a tiny twig fire and you know, put it to use. What's your thoughts on that, Edie?
Well, actually, that's absolutely correct. But unfortunately, we've got to go quickly to commercials now. But when we get back, we're going to have a very special guest who we've been looking forward to having for a long time. So this is A.D. Venture and the Wolfman, and we'll see you on the other side.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait. There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. And Embellus and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We're going to let them know! the new world government has been identified, and they thought they just cleared the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's gonna bring them news.
You have to stand up. Speak up, speak out.
Shade the Motion Picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShadeTheMotionPicture.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Does the media ever deceive the public?
A white plane, a very big jet, was flying in an unusual pattern near the White House over Lafayette Park. Very slowly, it made one circle and then...
Are the media and their sources trustworthy?
New York State and New Jersey will get their first doses of the swine flu vaccine.
The H1N1 virus has made thousands of people across the country sick. Many have died. And some worry that it could grow into a full-blown pandemic.
Where does our mainstream media get their news?
All this enjoyment is brought to you by all the things sweetened with NutraSweet.
There's a reason why we want to own these guns.
We're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this.
That was President Obama Friday suggesting it is now time to reopen the national debate on gun control.
The media tends to march in lockstep with the government.
Who is responsible when the media fabricates the news?
When the public is constantly fed messages that are potentially leading us into a war that may not be necessary, it's not fair to the American people, and it's not fair to journalism, because the truth isn't being told here. We found out that CNN International is actually making money from the Bahrain regime. They are a customer of Bahrain. Bahrain is paying CNN International to create content that shows Bahrain in a favorable light, to then air that content on CNN International.
Join us online at williamlewisfilms.com. That's williamlewisfilms.com.
Welcome back to the Barefoot Bushcraft Radio Show. This is A.D. Venture. I'm joined by my co-host, the Wolfman, and we've got a very special guest here today. It is David Arama, survival expert from the WSC Survival School. Thanks so much for joining us, David.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I just got back from the wild, so I was looking forward to talking to you guys.
Well, that's great. Well, where are you coming back from?
Well, I was leading and instructing a course in wild, edible, medicinal, useful, historical plants, trees, and shrubs, and through a community college. And we went on a nice hike today in the Coots Paradise Gardens area in the Hamilton region, and it was a lot of fun. We collected a lot of wild herbs and ate some watercress and cattail roots and started a fire using spruce sap. So it's the kind of stuff I love to do.
That's great. Now, why don't you share a little more with our audience that's international as to who exactly you are and what you do?
Sure, that would be fantastic. So I'm David Arama. Some people call me the Survivor Guy, not to be confused with Survivor Man. And although we do similar things, and I have a company called WSC Survival School Inc. It's located in the Southern Ontario region of Canada, and I basically host a lot of different wilderness training courses, everything from wilderness survival, primitive skills, map and compass, GPS training, edible plants courses, And we also run advanced camps that are a week or two long at times. We do some youth camp programs. I work with search and rescue at times and different law enforcement groups on occasion. So I run a lot of this kind of wilderness training stuff. But in addition, I also have a lodge called Marble Lake Lodge that's located up in the Bonnec, beautiful Bonnec Provincial Park area of Ontario, and a few other initiatives. And the main goal that we try to have in these programs is to teach people practical experiential skills. And a lot of times it's mostly for enjoyment and adventure and challenge. But there's also a serious side of it where every year across Canada, over 12,000 people are lost in the Canadian wilderness. And in Ontario, we have a lot of wilderness accidents that result in fatalities from ATVing and snowmobiling and boating. And so a lot of my business is to help prevent disaster and prevent loss of life in the Canadian wilderness. But we also deal with disaster preparedness and just for the everyday folk being prepared at their cottage or at home or in their car. So it's quite a lot that we offer, and it's a lot of fun. I've been doing this for over 35 years, and I look forward to doing it for a lot longer.
Wow, now that's fantastic. So you have a lot of varied experience out there. So what kind of experience, like what got you into this? Like do you have any formal education or training or background that sort of slid you into this career?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I started off as a city guy and a city kid growing up in the north end of Toronto, of all places, which I often refer to as a real wild wilderness compared to being in the woods, to be honest. I find it much safer and easier to survive in the wilderness at times compared to the experiences that I think a lot of us are finding in the highly technological, social media-based I call it the wild civilized world, where I think more and more we need to balance nature with all of this this civilization. But what got me into it as a young guy, I went out hiking and fishing, and I realized I started to love that. It was a bit of an escape, too. I was not too enchanted with city life and all of its trappings. And in the beginning, I ended up taking some courses at Humber College in the Outdoor Ed program. They have an outdoor ed certificate, and then I went for my environmental studies degree at York, and one thing led to another. What I found is sort of a passion, something I enjoy doing, but what I mostly enjoy is watching the students and the people we lead and sort of looking through their eyes and their experiences and what they learn, and that's sort of where I started.
That's actually quite interesting that you do mention that particular aspect, because for our listeners, I'm actually a former student of David Arama, and again, I've learned quite a lot from him and taken that and made it my own, you know, obviously with Barefoot Bushcraft and all the different activities that we're involved in. And it's definitely been an honor to work with David Arama. But I'm not the only person that has obviously been a student of David Arama's. David has had hundreds of students, probably even thousands, I should say. But one in particular actually is probably a little bit famous, I would say. Wouldn't you think, David? He's on TV. His name's Les Stroud. How did you end up meeting Les?
Well, you know, there's an interesting story also, and I met Les back in the early 1990s, and it's kind of all come full circle, because last week we were actually working together running a program called Project Ultimate Survivor with the Toronto 41 Division Cops and a bunch of inner-city youth and also some school teachers from school board. And it's kind of funny because we kind of reminisce about that, but back in the early 1990s, Les did just like what you did. He saw some kind of an ad and took some courses at Humber College, and I believe our survival training courses were the first ones he ever signed up for. And he also went on the 7-day survival simulation, which is our advanced course we run in August, where we actually have a group of people go out for a week to survive it. I have an off-the-grid property up north of Bancroft. which has over 350 acres. And it's really realistic because I have a homestead, an old pioneer cabin, and everything's with solar and wood stove. And it's a really great place to practice survival skills. And so that's where I met Les. And interestingly enough, he came from a videographer background, so he had all those skills already, and a musician and all of that. And years later, he went on to star and be nominated for numerous Gemini Awards for his shows Beyond Survival and Survivor Man. And, you know, frankly, I'm extremely proud of that. Whatever small, you know, impetus I might have had, inspiration in his early days, it probably wasn't so much of the survival skills. Maybe I was just a catalyst that was a positive person who was a mentor in that way. You know, this is a great place to be out in the wilderness to enjoy the adventure and challenge. And I'd like to think that the first skills he learned, you know, were just the beginning, because he's had many, many instructors around the world to get where he's at. But and then it's, you know, what's really interesting about it, just like you're having me on the show today, which I really appreciate, is it's really interesting how if you give to the students in the survival training, a lot of times they come back and give back to you. And, you know, Les didn't owe me anything. He paid his tuition fee like everybody else. And so he didn't owe me anything, nothing whatsoever. But one day I got a call from a studio, and they said, we need a guy who's really experienced with kids who can help us with a new series called Survive This. And it turned out we filmed two seasons of Survive This. It aired on YTV, and it aired in many countries. With me as the survival instructor and consultant, and Les as the host and executive producer. And I can only tell you what a thrill that was to watch it come full circle with those eight kids in each season being trained by me and then also mentored by Les. So it was I don't think you could ever repeat that whole experience ever again in the film industry. And it was quite a thrill. So that's sort of how it all started and where it's all gone.
Now, I just want to quickly mention to our listeners that I've put the links to all those different endeavors that you've just mentioned in our chat program here. So we've got the WSCSurvivalSchool.com, we've got the Marble Lodge link, we've got the ProjectLostYouthSurvival.org, and we've got the Survive This link in our chat.
Excellent. And I appreciate that too.
Yes, now our show goes to podcast fairly recently, right? You know, right just a couple of moments after, and then it gets put on various websites. My own personal website, wolfman.com, Barefoot Bushcraft. So they will be out there for a while. So hopefully, it will be able to, you know, people who watch it will be able to to get a little bit more information. So now, I would like to get your thoughts, if that's okay, on the concept of nature deficit disorder. Now, I don't know, I'm sure you must have heard of John Young. He's done a lot of work in that. I had the pleasure of spending, a couple of weeks doing courses with him once. And the benefits and services that you offer as an instructor, and the benefits that you've seen of taking children and adults into nature who have never been, and just your thoughts on the whole nature deficit concept.
Well, and that's one of my favorite concepts right now in the wilderness, nature deficit disorder. And I have to, give some plugs to the author of a book called Last Child in the Woods, Nature Deficit Disorder by Richard Loeb. And he has a follow-up sequel to that book also. And I think Richard Loeb put it all together when he said, a large part of our generation now, and probably the one before, have become so detached from wilderness and nature that they've actually lost all conception of reality in many ways, and have lost the experiences in nature that have also resulted in the loss of part of their the thinking part of their brain when it comes to logical thinking, decision making, and risk taking. And we see that more and more with young people and at-risk youth. Where we used to see at-risk youth, 11 to 16-year-olds, now we're seeing them 16 to 35 years old. And what's happening is the more technology and the more social media and the more we become detached from nature, because we are a part of nature, the more this seems to become more and more pronounced. And you see it where people are so completely detached and they even see for the first time an owl in the woods. And it's, wow, I've never seen or heard an owl before. That's the first. Oh, I didn't know this vegetable comes, you know, from the ground. I thought it came in a package. You know, that's where it was made. And you see that in kids, but actually more disturbing. I work with a lot of youth who have nature deficit disorder, and they can be cured by taking them out on experiences, hiking, and fishing, and camping. And, you know, the best experiences are survival and primitive survival, where they really go back to the land and really live like the pioneers and the voyageurs and the native peoples. And they get so close to the land that way, it's unbelievable. But what I really find troubling is I find in a lot of adults today in the school systems and the and governments and corporate and parents, it seems to be an all-pervasive issue. They don't really get it that kids need to get out in nature and run free, not have over-structure, like every moment structured in time. But just get out there, build forts, gather, like even gathering plants and getting to know why someone 300 years ago did that. Because they get a respect for themselves, they get a respect for adults, and more importantly to me, they get to respect nature and the environment. And for me, that's a big one because I see a world falling apart when it comes to the natural wilderness areas. And more, I'm finding that, you know, we got to get kids, we got to get this generation back into the woods to build their respect for the environment so they can see the value of protecting wilderness and creating more provincial and national parks around the world or state parks or wherever you might be, and just get out there and see that it's important that we have to go towards a sustainable planet here at some point, because if we don't, it's the only one we have. And that's why nature to me and wilderness, you know, altruistically is so very, very important, and to get kids out there.
That's an absolutely great point, and that's something that we definitely try to talk about here on the Barefoot Bushcraft Radio Show about that. In fact, you know, situation that everyone is experiencing, which is, in fact, the nature deficit disorder, and even, you know, adults themselves experience that sorts of thing, and they don't understand that that they might experience that sort of experience. So, Wolf, do you have any questions for David?
Sure, absolutely. More of just a comment. I was a very devout scout leader for a while, and I noticed a lot less people are interested in scouting. And I mean, the scouting and bushcraft things, I have, you know, I sometimes will meet people who are a little later life stage, 50s and 60s, and they'll be like, "You're an outdoor what? Why do I need to learn this? Like, when I was your age, people would have laughed if you said you taught them camping. You know, we learned that in scouts." And unfortunately, there's so many people, and there's a huge decline in scouting worldwide. And I think that's a shame, because it teaches young boys, I think, very similar to what you do, right? It teaches them that passion, and it couples that passion with safety. And I see that, I don't know your feelings about that, about the mesh of, you know, there's a bit of a decline in scouting, and, you know, nature deficit disorders on the rise, that maybe there's something going on there.
Well, you're absolutely correct, and that's also dear to my heart. Although in a lot of our programs, when I first started out, it was more about teaching adults how to survive in the wilderness when they're out fishing and hunting and hiking and canoeing. What I found is a lot of people just need to get out into nature to save themselves from the wild world we live in that's gone more wild and crazy every day. And so it's insane that scouting is actually going down in numbers, because what we need is a tenfold increase in scouting, guides, pathfinders, cadets, all of these programs, and all of those leaders out there who give their extra time and effort on weekends and evenings to do all of that. This is crucial. This kind of training isn't happening anymore in the school system. And you picked a point here, which I'm ready to pounce on, because you'll see in a lot of our school systems today, they're getting away from any experiential, hands-on, logical training, and kids are coming out of the system and they don't know how to cope and survive in the real wild world. Although a lot, and I give the benefit of a doubt to some schools, there are a certain amount of teachers now who are starting to take this full circle, and they're introducing credit courses in the high school system in outdoor ed or school in the woods outdoor ed credits or semester in the woods. And more teachers. I'm working with some of them. They're training. They're coming up to my camp and learning a train-to-trainer program, and they're bringing that back. But the thought that scouting is going downwards in numbers, it's crazy. I mean, we need more and more kids to go into scouting.
Absolutely. And I should mention what you're just in relation to what you're discussing, I had the privilege, I should say, to experience schooling in Ontario before the major cuts happened to all the different outdoor education centers that existed here in this province. And I feel very privileged to have experienced all these different places, and that really truly got, added to my excitement, because my parents initially planted that seed inside me of being in nature and enjoying the wilderness. But having that experience with the school system helped, you know, further supplement that and show me that there was more out there than just, academics or, you know, sports or anything like that. There was that aspect of outdoor education that could be enjoyed and learned from. But unfortunately, in today's current state, a lot of different outdoor education centers have been closed by the subsequent governments of Ontario. And unfortunately, I definitely believe, and I'm sure that both of you do agree, that the youth of Ontario and of Canada have suffered because of it.
Immensely. In fact, our whole society has suffered, and our underlying culture of ethics and morals and everything has been, I think, harmed in a great way. And it's especially sad. I know I don't want to get into a lot of politics in this show, more about the great outdoors and going out and starting a fire with two sticks and a flint and eating some cattail roots and making some bark out of rope and, you know, rope bark and so forth. But, you know, if you just look at one or two little things like wasting $600 million on those gas plants in the province of Ontario, can you imagine 600 outdoor organizations that would have each received $1 million grants to foster outdoor education? I mean, it's mind-boggling. And I don't know what's going on in our society today, but I know one thing. You guys are on the right track with a show like that. And we need around the world to introduce more and more people back to nature, because that's where we came from and we're still a part of it. We cannot detach ourselves from the wild wilderness world of nature and the circle of life, and that's a critical part of everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, I totally agree with you there. When you look at, when you said it's part of our culture, when do you ever go out in the woods and you meet someone who's miserable, right? You go out in the culture and you pass someone and you're like, hey, how's it going? Nice day. Catch anything if they've got fishing rods? Where are you camping? Where are you from? And it's like whoever you meet out in the woods, you seriously have a vested interest in whoever this total strange person is. Now, you try that in like downtown Toronto and you're like, hey, buddy, how's it going? Nice shoes. Like your backpack. You're going to get a kick in the head. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, nature recharges your battery. It rejuvenates your spirit and your mind, and it takes you away from the complex world that we is, the ever-complex, changing, civilized world. And actually, Richard Louv, in his sequel book to Last Child in the Woods, talks about the fact that, and I agree with him, that the more technologically advanced we get and the more social media connected we get, the more we need to balance that with time spent experiencing nature.
That's absolutely correct. Now, right before we end the show here, because we have only got a few minutes left, I just want to remind our audience here that you can learn more about Davidarama by visiting www.wscsurvivalschool.com. You can also learn about Marble Lake Lodge by Googling it. And you can even learn more about David's nonprofit charity organization, which is geared specifically to helping at-risk youth, at www.projectlostyouthsurvival.org. And you can learn a lot about great things there. You can even donate to the cause, which is absolutely wonderful. And David, before we go out from the show here, is there anything else you just want to mention to our audience about what you have planned for now or for the future, or what we can be expecting for Davidarama?
Well, we have a number of projects coming up and a lot of different courses. I'm really looking forward to the August 18th to 24th Survival Camp. We do still have a couple spaces left, but we're almost full. And I'm looking forward to some great years ahead running programs. I applaud your show and the viewers and listeners, I should say, who are listening in, to keep on surviving and get out into the wilds and wildernesses around the world, and let's all work together to help preserve nature and bring it back to the forefront for youth around the world. That, to me, is really important. That's what I'm all about. And when you go out in the wilderness, do it safely. Carry an emergency survival kit. Let somebody know where you're going. Have some communication device just in case, like a sat phone or some kind of a location device, a personal locator, and a tracking device. And always have a compass and a map and your basic survival equipment you should always have on you, no matter when you go away for a day or two, a week or two, or an hour or two. You better be ready to survive in case something goes wrong and have the most basic things for shelter, fire, water, signaling, food, first aid, navigation, and communications. And to me, that's the key. And dress properly for the outdoors. Because I have a saying, and it's my famous motto in my courses is, you are biodegradable. Don't become one with nature.
Exactly. That's great. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the Barefoot Bushcraft Radio Show. This is Aiden Venture, joined by the Wolfman and our absolute special guest, David Arama of WSC Survival School. Be sure to check him out on the internet, and be sure to come and join us next week on the Barefoot Bushcraft Radio Show. This is the Wolfman. This is AD Venture and the Wolfman, and we'll see you next week.